Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. On January 1st, 2020, the world knew nothing about the novel coronavirus. But by March, its stampede across the globe was well underway and had become a serious concern in the United States. With speed even more astonishing than the spread of COVID-19, the race began to find a vaccine, and no wonder. Nearly 200,000 Americans have lost their lives to the virus, over 3,000 of them in North Carolina, with a worldwide total of 930,000. This morning, the number of confirmed cases around the world stands at 29,356,292. The unpredictable and often deadly nature of this pathogen has turned our world and our economy upside down. Right now, we have few defenses outside of social distancing and mask wearing, but those have become political flashpoints within the U.S. There is, of course, the promise of a vaccine, and around the world, various governments and pharmaceutical companies are working at breakneck pace to design, test, and hopefully quickly distribute something that will, at best, eradicate COVID, and at worst, slow it down. Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and the nation's point man on the virus, says he is cautiously optimistic we can have a vaccine by year's end. But even that is becoming politicized. And because of suspicions that political pressure is being exerted to rush this medicine to market, fears that already exist among some about vaccines are being heightened. Will it be safe? How many people will be willing to take it? Who will have access to it first? Those are just a few of the questions swirling around the COVID-19 vaccine. So this hour, let's learn more about what's being done to develop it and get answers to those and other questions. Carolyn Johnson is a science reporter for The Washington Post who has reported extensively on this topic, and she joins us in the Mountain Time Zone along with Dr. Dale Owen, CEO of Trion Medical Partners. He's right here. And they are, Trion Medical Partners is participating in the phase 3 trial of the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine. Thank you both for joining us this morning. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
Nice to have you here. So, Doctor, let me start with you. From what you know of the medical community and what is at stake for them and certainly for your patients who elect to get this vaccine once it becomes available, are you confident that science will supersede any political pressure in determining when and if a vaccine becomes available? Are you confident of that?
Thanks for that opening salvo there, Mike. That's a really tough question, but I've got a lot of faith in the science and the scientists involved, and I don't think that they're going to bow to the peer pressure to bring this forward earlier than it should be. We need to go through the right process and make sure that we have confidence in the vaccine, because going through the right process will enable everyone to feel that level of confidence in the vaccine that's really needed. And so I am confident that science will prevail in this process.
And the who makes the decision about whether or not vaccine A or B or C will be distributed, how, when, who decides that it's ready to go out and here we go?
Well, it's a combination of things. And I think Carolyn can add to this as well, in that the scientists and the studies themselves through the FDA will determine when things have been done appropriately. And then through that mechanism, then make it available to the government and such in that fashion. Government and exert pressure early, though. That's going to be the issue.
So, Carolyn, you've done extensive reporting on this, and in the course of that, you've talked to a lot of people, one would imagine, about this. Are there enough safeguards within the medical industry and enough economic safeguards, because making a bad decision here could be economically tragic, that would remove people's fears about a vaccine, its effectiveness, and its safety, do you think?
The companies are doing their best to build trust and confidence right now in a vaccine. And I mean, it's a hard It's a hard situation. This morning, Moderna, which is one of the leading candidates, released the full 135-page clinical trial protocol. Mm-hmm. It's a really detailed document showing how they designed the trial and how they predetermined how you would measure safety and efficacy. And some of this is just opening a window into how science and medicine always proceed. But, you know, the public is usually not interested at this granular level. So what you're seeing is the companies both trying to reassure people that they are not facing pressure, although there is, of course, the pressure to get an effective vaccine out to the public as soon as possible, but also to just kind of show the public how the process works to make them realize we're not inventing safety guardrails on the fly right now. This is an actual process that exists to make sure that people aren't going to be harmed, that a harmful product doesn't make it onto the market. So,
but just as people don't usually pay much attention to the medical procedures that go into releasing a new medication or a new vaccine, nor does the government under normal circumstances outside of the overseers at the FDA. But the president is pushing for a rollout by the day before the election and certainly before the end of the year. Dr. Anthony Fauci, as I mentioned a second ago, is cautiously optimistic about having a vaccine by the end of the year. Yesterday, the head of the CDC, Dr. Robert Redfield, said a vaccine could be available in a very limited supply by mid-November, December, but that it will not be until late or mid-2021 that we will have a vaccine that is widely available. And then the president almost immediately contradicted him, saying he was mistaken, that he didn't understand the question he was asked. I'm not sure a question was asked. I think that's his opinion. So who do we believe, Carolyn? Who do we believe?
Well, what Dr. Redfield said has been similar to what all the other both in the government and outside the government experts have been really saying, honestly, for months. You know, Dr. Fauci has said much the same about the availability of a vaccine to the population broadly. Moncef Slaoui, who's in charge of the whole federal effort to warp speed to make this really fast, to make sure that the supply is available, has said quite similar. So I think we have to trust that and watch that this all happens as scientists think it should. And so that's part of this whole transparency thing. Like, we need outside experts in this case to make sure that, like, they agree that things are going well in a way that normally we would just trust all the levers of government. And I think we should still, there are so many good people still at the FDA who are working night and day to make this work. But yes, we have a very strange and really difficult situation with the president contradicting his lead scientist.
Well, the president has done nothing in the last 3.5 years. If he's done nothing more, he's certainly decreased trust in almost every institution that we have come to trust over the years. And when a pandemic like this hits and trust is paramount in terms of importance and in terms of making people feel that we can do certain things to protect ourselves now, and I will be safe, my family will be safe if I get a vaccine once it's approved. If you don't trust that process, then what are you supposed to do? You're the medical guy here, doctor. As long as we have a federal government and a White House in disarray, sending out mixed messages, when you have a president who has disseminated falsehoods about this virus from the start, can we ever trust a vaccine until somebody has taken it, or several hundred thousand people have taken it and they don't get sick?
So I think that the first part of this that becomes really important is to remember the past and the Tuskegee trials and lack of informed consent and things of that nature in the syphilis trials and underrepresented populations and such created a lack of trust. Now look at what Moderna has done. And I think that they are trying to be transparent and trying to create the trust. And by releasing the entire protocol, this is a huge issue to allow everyone to really see it for what it is. So I think the science community now is trying to put the trust back in the process, and that's going to help tremendously in the whole ability to create these trials and finish them on time.
I have about a minute left in this segment, but AstraZeneca withdrew or stopped their trial for a moment. It seemed like a moment, and then they've gone back to it now. Have they released the information as to why, Carolyn, that they stopped the trial and why they decided it was okay to resume it?
Not in detail, not in the detail that most scientists want to see. It is typical. I mean, not typical, but it's not out of the norm for a trial to pause the way they've paused it because there's an adverse event. That's how the process is supposed to work. It means they're carefully following up to make sure that this wasn't related to the vaccine. They've resumed it in some countries, but not yet in the U.S., at least unless something just changed. So I'm hoping that when they do resume it here, there will be more details released about the event and what happened and why they decided that it wasn't related. I mean, one of the things that's true about sizes of these trials and just clinical trials in general is there will be adverse events because there's a lot of people in them and they could get sick for all kinds of reasons, not related to getting a vaccine or and so we just need to know that they've examined that.
Carolyn Johnson is a science reporter who has covered the vaccine or the development of a vaccine and COVID-19 extensively for the Washington Post. Dr. Dale Owen is the CEO of Trion Medical Partners. They're conducting one series of trials right now for Moderna and others on the way. When we come back, we'll talk about, is the vaccine going to be the fix that we're hoping it will be, and how many other vaccines are in process and what they may bring to the table. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the coronavirus vaccines under development, whether they will be the cure, the panacea that we're hoping for, among other things. Carolyn Johnson is a science reporter who has covered this extensively for the Washington Post. Dr. Dale Owen is with us. He's CEO of Trion Medical Partners. They're in the midst of a Phase 3 trial of the Moderna vaccine, and he'll be... Trion Medical Partners will be launching other trials from other companies in a moment. Before we talk about whether this will be the fix, off the air, we were just talking about how President Trump has said that he hears the trials are very promising, that they're going very well. Doctor, you're conducting a trial. Do you know how they're going?
Well, the part that I know is that enrollment is going well, except for underrepresented groups, which we need significantly more for this trial. But we're not able to know exactly how the trial is going, and we're actually performing the trial, so don't think it's correct that...
Do the companies involved in creating these vaccines know how these trials are going at this point in time?
That not even they are supposed to know. This is a double-blinded trial.
So when the president says he hears... that things are going well, can there be a scintilla of truth in that statement?
I don't know where he could possibly be hearing it from.
Okay. So propaganda. Okay. Carolyn, when and if a vaccine does become available, does that mean that this miserable chapter in the history of the world will be over? Will we be in the clear? Will we be able to go back to our normal lives?
Well, a vaccine is the best tool to get there, but it will take a while. It will lift gradually, not like in a clap of thunder, because in order to get the vaccine to enough people that the world is really safe will just take time. It's a huge logistical challenge. The leading vaccines right now have demanding ultra cold storage conditions that aren't typical of, say, like the flu vaccine. So that's creating a strain on just distribution systems. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, even though that sounds kind of boring, no one ever thinks about how their medicine got to the pharmacy or into their arm or whatever. You know, that's actually going to be a huge challenge. These are also two dose vaccines right now, the ones being tested. So someone has to come back 3 to 4 weeks later and get a second booster shot. That's going to make it a bit more complicated. These are all solvable problems. And yes, the world will return to normal. But it's not going to be at once.
That second shot has to be the same vaccine you took the first time from the same company. It can't be a mix and match situation. You quote in one of your articles, Carolyn, a man, but I think it's a man named Yonatan Grad. Did I say his name correctly? Assistant professor of infectious diseases and immunology at the Harvard School of Public Health. He says it seems unlikely that a vaccine is an off switch or a reset button where we will go back to pre-pandemic times. If a vaccine turns out not to be the off switch, what is it?
Well, I think he meant in terms of the light going out. I think it's more like a dimmer switch, maybe, or something like a bit slower is the idea. So I think what a lot of people that I talk to who don't necessarily follow science and medicine, they, and this is totally natural, are thinking about what's going to happen. When can they finally hug their grandkids? When can they go on a trip again? You know, everyone has this bucket list of things they've been waiting for months to be able to do. And the natural thing is to say, well, once there's a vaccine, I can do all that stuff. That is potentially true, but we have to know the characteristics of the vaccine. That's another issue. I mean, vaccines aren't perfect. And so if the vaccine offers even partial protection, that could be so powerful for bringing the world back to normal. But it does mean some people might still need to have exercise precautions like social distancing for a while. It doesn't mean we need to be gloomy permanently. It just means shaping expectations now so that we're not disappointed if on the day a vaccine is approved, the world doesn't change back. I think that's smart because otherwise we're going to, you know, people will have really high expectations that won't be met, and that could lead to less confidence or less trust.
So you also report that not only do some scientists doubt that any end-of-year deadline can be met, outside scientists believe it is dangerous to set public expectations about any deadline. Why?
Well, we don't know in advance that the vaccines are going to be safe and effective. That's why we have to have people running these large trials and doing all this work. If we knew that they were effective, we would not need to do that work. And so saying that you can know by a certain time that a vaccine will be available is just jumping a few steps ahead of the whole process. We need to demonstrate it. And most of them, you know, hopefully would work, but we don't know. And scientists have to prepare people for the fact that some of them probably might not.
Carolyn spoke to a medical experts doctor who told her that we might, at least initially, come up with a couple of mediocre vaccines that don't work as effectively as we might hope. And you already mentioned, I think, the Tuskegee Institute study where things didn't go well. Dr. Salk's polio vaccine did work. It cut polio by 80%, but it took several years for polio to disappear. And you report there was Carolyn reports there was an incident that I had forgotten about a bad batch of that vaccine that failed to fully inactivate the virus. It infected 40,000 children. It paralyzed 51. It killed 5. Are we counting, Doctor, too much on a panacea to be, or on a vaccine to be a panacea here?
I think, no question, I think that we really can't let our guard down. We've got to push hard to get the vaccine ready and do all the work that has to be done, but then we can't let our guard down and then have a big spread of the virus amongst those who are not vaccinated and create another large surge. I think that's something we've got to really watch out for. We've demonstrated every time we let our guard down that we get a big surge. We have to protect against that.
There are organizations around the country testing these vaccines. You are involved in the trial for the Moderna vaccine. As Carolyn mentioned, they just released a 135-page document on what their vaccine is all about. It is using genetic material from the virus, known as mRNA, to prompt cells in the body to make a fragment of the virus that will then train the immune system to fight off an infection. Other vaccines are using different methodologies. Is there a chance that any of these vaccines could have the same problem that the Salk vaccine, in which the virus is not completely dead and therefore could infect you with coronavirus, Doctor?
Certainly. I think that first of all, we don't know enough yet. This is a brand new virus. So all the possibilities of different side effects and so forth still exist. And that's why we're doing the trials to find out if those are going to be issues. So we really won't know that until we start to implement use of the vaccine.
And you also report, Carolyn, that having a virus available might cause ordinary people like me to lower their guard, stop wearing masks, stop social distancing, because I got the shot and the virus may not be effective to the degree that getting the shot is enough. Are you talking about people en masse? Should we fear en masse? People are too confident in this once they get a shot that we may actually see an uptick in this virus because it's not as effective as we'd hoped?
Oh, vaccine. Well, I think that there needs to be a lot of education about how it works and what people should do. And some of that's going to depend on what these trials find. If they find it's a highly effective vaccine, that will be different than one that isn't as effective. Or if it's really effective in one group, then that might be different than another. But if, you know, we just need to, first of all, know how well the vaccine works and who it works best for. And it also depends who gets it. So because it's going to be limited in supply in the beginning, everyone's not going to be able to get it. You're not going to know who has it. I think people in general are still going to need to exercise precautions. You know, if a vaccine is 60% effective, for example, that could still be very important, but it doesn't mean everyone is going to be completely protected who has it. And that's one of the reasons we still need to develop treatments. It's not just about vaccines. You don't want some people to still get ill and need medical care and not have a really life-saving treatment. So there's got to be efforts on all fronts, because even with a fairly effective vaccine in the beginning, there will still be people getting sick and we still are going to want to save their lives. So, but yes, I think there just needs to be a lot of education. I mean, even that it has to get, you have to get a second dose and that it takes a little bit for you to be protected. It's not like the minute you get the shot in your arm, you rip your mask off and hug everyone you know without any precautions. Your body has to raise up these immune defenses and that takes a while. And so there'll just have to be a level of education. This is the same for other vaccines. The flu vaccine doesn't provide instantaneous protection and also only provides partial protection. That's why we still try and have some treatments.
Yesterday, former Vice President Biden said he didn't trust Donald Trump when it comes to the vaccine because Donald Trump does not trust science. And Biden said, trust the scientists. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who don't trust science at the moment, and a lot of people who do not trust vaccines. We saw that years ago when people refused to get their children vaccinated for things that have been available for nearly half a century in some cases. How do we regain that trust, doctor? Because if people don't take the vaccine because they lack trust, either in science or in that particular vaccine or in vaccines in general, we won't make any progress, will we?
I agree completely. And that goes back to the Tuskegee trial when they were looking at syphilis and then not getting informed consent and then not providing penicillin treatment and so forth. And it took almost 40 years for them to come clean on that issue. That's been a huge problem. And so I think that the big issue now is pure transparency. And, you know, I tried to be a person that could be in the vaccine trial myself, but I couldn't do it because I'm an investigator. But I think that the medical community needs to get out there in the population and explain what's going on and be very transparent about it. We're actually starting that with a lot of different communities in town. Explain this and make it more robust.
What's the motivation for the people who are enrolled in your trial? Why are most of them doing this? Because there is some risk involved in this, one would imagine.
Well, we were first told that we were going to have 350 people to enroll, and that's what was published and should be available to just about everybody for the Moderna trial. But we had over 1,700 want to participate.
Wow.
And I would say the vast majority, it was because they wanted to do something for mankind. Truly, that's what it came down to. It wasn't to protect themselves because they knew they had the risk of getting placebo instead of the actual vaccine. So they all thought that they really owed it to the rest of the country and the world.
Carolyn, you report that there are 170+ vaccines being tested on animals and in lab experiments. 10 vaccines are in phase one trials, which involve small numbers of healthy young people. 15 vaccines are in phase two trials, broadened to include a larger group of people, including those at higher risk. 7 vaccines are in phase three trials, using thousands of people to test effectiveness and safety. Are some of these the same vaccines or very similar vaccines, or are they all completely different?
They fall into several kind of buckets of different technology platforms. So we're lucky in some ways to be in an age of science where we have a lot of different ways to flexibly and quickly design vaccines. In the olden days, like in polio, they used, killed or inactivated virus or weakened virus as their vaccine. And now we can use all of these biotechnology tricks to, you know, make the body create a little piece of the spike protein on the outside of the coronavirus. But so I would say that there are like a bunch of different techniques, and then there are variable, like each one has its own kind of special sauce around it.
Given the time, I've got 30 seconds here, doctor, but given the time it's taken to understand what this virus is and how it works and to develop and test vaccines, what has allowed us to move so quickly in less than 6 months in some cases to get to the trial phase? How have we done it?
I think it's just pure grit and motivation, and the physicians and the groups and the different companies. And I think there's also probably a monetary win too for the company that wins it.
Wow. We have to take a break. There's more to talk about in terms of the safety and efficacy of any vaccine that comes out of these trials, one of which is being conducted by Trium Medical Partners and by one of our guests, Dr. Dale Owen, the CEO of that organization. Carolyn Johnson is also here, science reporter for The Washington Post. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Fifth Third Bank, dedicated to the financial empowerment of the community by investing time, resources, and people in the Charlotte area and throughout the state. More at 53.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the coronavirus and the search for a vaccine with Carolyn Johnson, a science reporter for The Washington Post, and Dr. Dale Owen, CEO of Trion Medical Partners. They are conducting a Moderna Phase 3 trial, which we'll talk about in a second, and other trials from other vaccine companies are on the way to Trium Medical Partners. You recently sent out a message, doctor, from Trium Medical Partners, and you wrote, "While COVID-19 continues to be mysterious and overwhelming, we have learned much about the virus in a relatively short amount of time." What have you learned?
Well, I think that we've learned that it's, which populations it tends to affect and damage the most. A lot of the minority populations, Hispanic, African-American populations are being devastated by this virus compared to the Caucasian population. Dense population in cities and so forth is a huge issue. We know that it's highly contagious. We know that a lot of younger people are not as affected as severely, and obviously the more elderly population and those at risk are being affected much more. So those are some of the primary issues. And we also know that we were warned from 100 years ago that watch out for the surges associated with opening our schools. And sure enough, that's happened.
Let's talk about this minority situation, because I know that you're looking for additional volunteers, particularly in the African-American and Latino community, and they are seemingly more at risk. And according to the New York Times, which released an article this morning about Moderna's release of their own information on their own trial, the vaccine, about 28% of the participants in that trial around the world are Black, Latino, or from other groups that have been particularly hit hard. You're saying that you need more. And my question is, do you know if the reason they're being hit harder than other populations is physiological, or is it societal? Is it because a lot of these folks are frontline workers who cannot socially distance, or they're crammed into cities where they cannot socially distance? What do we know?
I don't think that there's been enough studies right now to be able to say all of those things. I mean, there are many variables that could all be part of that equation. I don't think any of us are prepared to be able to answer that question fully without more science involved.
Is that why you need more minority volunteers? Around the world, they need more minority. Is that why?
Sure. We need to have studies that are representative of the whole population in all walks of life. And that's important so that we can trust the vaccine to do what it's supposed to and with the information that's provided during the scientific study of it.
So you're in phase three trials with this one particular vaccine, and I don't know how much information you can give out or even how much information you know, because there are double-blind studies and you don't necessarily know the outcome. But what happens in a phase three trial? What's happening right now with the people you're working with?
Well, we're going through enrollment process, and what we do is a really long, exhaustive informed consent process, and there's an exam associated with it. We test for coronavirus to make sure that people fit the study and that they don't have any exclusion criteria. And we also administer the vaccine. Hmm.
Flu vaccines, new ones, are developed every single year. And as we all know, depending upon the best guessed predictions by scientists, we go back and we get a new flu shot that's designed to deal with the strain that might be released in the population at large that year. Vaccines for polio, for mumps, for shingles, other virus-based ailments have been refined, and they've become mainstays of modern medicine. And maybe you have to go back for a booster shot after 10 or 15 years, but usually one shot does it in many cases. Yet we have been unable to find a vaccine for HIV. Can you give us a primer on why some viruses lend themselves to vaccines and others don't?
Well, I'm not a virologist and don't pretend to be one, but the issue is that there are a lot of different mutations. Different viruses mutate at different rates and in different ways. And the types of immunity that we display to each type of virus is also different. And so in each one of those situations, they all become very unique. So each virus becomes its own unique process and history. And so we have to adapt and create a whole new system of vaccine for each type of virus.
Is there something about this virus that tells you, or it tells virologists, that this virus will lend itself to a vaccine? And I understand from people who I've talked to, and it may not be true, that we've learned a lot about viruses through research on HIV, but we also know there's no vaccine for HIV.
Well, I think that we know that the coronavirus, there's a great amount of anticipation that the coronavirus is going to be a virus that we can more readily create a vaccine for than other viruses. So there's no question there's a hope that this particular vaccine will be much more successful at being created than anything for HIV or something like it.
So, Carolyn, we have three drug makers, if I'm right about the number, that are in late stage trials, phase three trials for a vaccine: Pfizer, Moderna, and AstraZeneca in the United States. What can you tell us about those vaccines in terms of how they differ and the promise of their being available quickly?
Well, they use two different technologies. The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are both using messenger RNA, which is this genetic material that codes for proteins and basically turns your cells into little factories for little distinctive bits of the coronavirus. And then the AstraZeneca vaccine is it's a viral vectored vaccine, which means they take a harmless virus and they put also a gene basically for distinctive part of the coronavirus. And it sort of does a very similar thing in the end, you know, creates this spiky protein and hopefully teaches your body to recognize the real thing. in terms of availability of vaccines, I mean, they've been making a lot of huge investments from the government and billions of dollars into pre-purchasing these. Pfizer has said that by the end of the year, they think they could have 100 million doses available. Moderna has been less specific about the number of doses that might be available by the end of the year, but that the availability question is sort of different than whether it's available to people, because what they're doing is making these vaccines without knowing whether they're going to work. So they'll have them on the shelf, but they're not going to give them to people until they know whether they're safe or effective. And so they, if they don't have the data, they could have them on the shelf and not be able to give them for some time. And then into 2021, you know, everyone has really big numbers that they're talking about in terms of, you know, how many they can hope to make. But I think, you know, in the short term, it's going to be, if there is a vaccine available by the end of the year, it would be in limited availability to subgroups of people, probably.
There have been some questions raised about whether if you contract this virus, you are immune to it going forward. I mean, if you get it and you recover or you never have symptoms and it goes away, that you may be immune forever. And there's some people saying maybe not. Maybe you 6 months later, you turn around and you get it again. Does that impact how a vaccine might work, doctor?
Well, I think that, yes, I mean, it certainly could. I think that the thing that most people aren't aware of is that, and it's frequently talked about in the media, is that people are afraid that antibody levels that are generated by vaccines or our own immune system naturally might wane down and then decrease our ability to fight the virus in the future. But they have to remember that there are B lymphocytes that are called memory B cells that produce these antibodies, and hopefully they will maintain that memory capability and store the capability and memory to fight this virus in the future with something that looks similar to it, hasn't mutated too much. And those cells are usually held in the bone marrow and spleen and things of that nature.
So federal officials, I think it was yesterday, time moves so quickly now, it's hard to keep up, but they with the so-called Operation Warp Speed, it's a multi-agency effort to quickly deliver a coronavirus vaccine when available. They reported yesterday that distribution of a vaccine would begin within 24 hours of any approval or emergency authorization, and further that no American will have to pay a single dime out of their pockets. Carolyn, what do you know about how this might happen? Because as you mentioned earlier, different vaccines require different transport and storage parameters. So do you have any idea of how they are going to accomplish this?
Well, they are trying to come up with distribution plans right now. And the framework that was released yesterday, I mean, the one question it did answer was whether people would pay for it. So that's good, because it's could be a barrier to access. But I have talked to many people involved in the distribution chain, and there are just a lot of unanswered questions that they need to answer in order to be prepared. I mean, they might need to secure a big supply of dry ice. But one of the things that is a concern that I've heard is that the federal government is leaving it up to the states to do what they're calling micro plans in order to distribute the vaccine. And that may be good, but it could lead to kind of a chaotic and disparate response, and could lead states to be competing with each other in some ways, or sites at states to be competing for vaccines. So a lot of confusion still, at least from the distribution side. I mean, we don't even really know yet who's going to be giving the vaccine. They've been talking about mass vaccination clinics, but will that be run by hospitals or pharmacies? There's a lot of details that really need to be worked out.
How do they choose who goes first? Who gets it first? Is it since no money is being exchanged, who gets it first?
Well, there is a really a process for this that occurs with other vaccines. There's a CDC committee that examines the situation and makes recommendations for who can get it first. They prioritize, you know, typically people at highest risk for getting the virus. In this case, They haven't released the final guidelines, but they've talked about, you know, frontline healthcare workers as one group, older people in nursing homes or long-term care settings, since that's been, they've been devastated by this. And they have talked a little bit about how to give it to make sure that people who really are at highest risk get this, because if a bunch of people who are able to work from home, who are really well educated and believe the system works for them, get this vaccine, it's not really going to help the world nearly as much.
So I have a minute left. Even if they're successful, doctor, in getting 24-hour distribution after 24 hours after it has been approved, do we have the infrastructure to distribute this virus, this vaccine rather, to 329 million Americans? And even if we did, how long would it take to inoculate everyone if they agreed to be inoculated?
Well, I don't know that we have the infrastructure, but I know that we'll step up. Put it out there to the medical community, they'll do it. And we'll come up with creative and inventive ideas. That's who we are. That's what we'll do. And we'll work with the government to do so.
So the 39% of Americans,
maybe more than one vaccine too.
39% of Americans say they would take a Donald Trump approved vaccine. Only 39%. Is there a plan for dealing with any substantial number of people, Carolyn, very quickly, who would refuse to take this vaccine, any vaccine, very quickly?
That's something they're working on, different kinds of ways to do outreach. But I think the initial challenge is there won't be enough vaccine. And so I think getting the people who are pro-vaccine to get their shots will be the first challenge. And then following that, we need to deal with the vaccine hesitancy. I don't mean it's less of a problem. It's just that we have enough on our plate almost getting it to everyone.
You can stay up to date on the development of these vaccines and on the coronavirus, what we're discovering about it, by reading Carolyn Johnson, the science reporter in the Washington Post, because she is on top of this every single step of the way. Dr. Dale Owen, CEO of Trion Medical Partners. Now they're now in their Moderna Phase 3 trial, and they need more minorities. Thank you both for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.